I'm so happy to be here this morning. I've been looking forward to this all week. I've only got a few lessons left with you. And let me preview now, teaching next month will be Jack Lyerly. And I think the planned curriculum is Corinthians, 1 Corinthians. So you're going to be in good hands. I'm going to be excited to be a student in that class. Maybe more so than I am a teacher in this one. But I have a couple of good lessons left for us. And I don't think there's anything to do but to dig right in. I've got Matthew 6, 31 through 33 because that fit on a slide. But if you will let me, I'm going to start reading here in verse 25 to get us started this morning. So this is Matthew 6, 25, and I'm reading RSV. Therefore, I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you shall eat, or what you shall drink, or about your body, what you shall put on. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothing? Look at the birds of the air. They neither sow nor reap nor gather into barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not of more value than they? 27. And which of you, by being anxious, can add one cubit to the span of his life? And why are you anxious about clothing? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. Yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass of the field, which today is alive and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, will he not much more clothe you, O men of little faith? Therefore do not be anxious, saying, what shall we eat, what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For the Gentiles seek all these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them all. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things shall be yours as well. And I titled my lesson, Seek Ye First, because as you know, I can't get King James out of my brain. It's been in there too long, and it's not going to, the King James version of everything is simply not going to come out. But I think the point is the same. What I want to talk about this morning is priorities. But I'm going to take a practical approach to priorities. And my thought on priorities is how we can help some of our younger families with their priorities. I don't have to tell you that young families are busy. Several of you guys have let me know how busy your kids and grandkids are. Sometimes busy to distraction, and I think that might be the norm in America today. I don't think that's exceptional. I remember as a kid growing up in the 70s where there was a family on our street that always had something going. They had kids in all different, you know, they had a tennis player and they had a violinist and school was just a third of the day for them. They would then take off after school and drop kids everywhere to diving practice and to this and to that. And I remember thinking, well, that's a family of really talented people. They're probably, you know, amazing at all these things. And that's why they're so busy. As I was, you know, mowing the lawn or whatever, or playing with my dog in the street. But that family has become America. They were just the forerunners of the busy, busy family. And I think that they probably would be considered average or pretty calm compared to the families that are going on today. So my comment is hectic is the norm. So we're in an environment where a full schedule is assumed. I'll just say it that way and we'll start there. And you know, I think we are in an amazing position to help advise these people. If half my life is over, and it is, I assure you, I have had an opportunity to decide what my priorities are. And I have done that correctly in some circumstances. And let me tell you, I have done it incorrectly in circumstances. Both of those experiences have made me smarter. As long as you don't die, any given situation has the opportunity to gain wisdom and knowledge. And so far, I've managed to not die. Some of you may be disappointed in that, and I understand. My comment here is Americans are busy, But are we too busy for God? Because if we're too busy for God, if we go back to seek ye first, we have a real problem. We're going to read 4 more verses, I think, this morning, and the Bible is very clear about our priorities. There's no ambiguity. There's no uncertainty in the Bible about what is important, what matters, and what should be put, and I'm going to say, at the top of the stack. And this information is a couple thousand years old now, but none of it is out of date. Not one word of it has expired. None of it has been replaced by newer and better knowledge. Because of that, I think those of us in this class may need to help stand up for God when the priorities get decided. We're going to talk about that as we go forward. But I've already seen some of you do that. I've seen some of you in my own life talk about and make room for God in my priorities, speak into other people's lives as well. If we make room for God in our lives, our chaos goes away. I'm not telling you that I will end busy time, or a mother won't have to drive a child across town at rush hour for what practice? Soccer, shall we say? We'll say soccer practice today. But I think a clear examination of priorities will lead to less chaos and running around like crazy. Because some of that running around like crazy, as a father of 3 children, was of no benefit. And I don't mean no benefit to the church. I mean no benefit to the children. Was of no benefit to the family. There's some portion of what we're involved in our schedules that quite simply didn't add any value, didn't help anybody with anything. And I know that it can be difficult to make cuts. Some of you I know have been leaders in businesses, and there's always that time of the year, and we're at it now, where we do our budget for next year. I gleefully bragged at work a while back that for the first time in many decades, I don't have a cost center to budget anymore. And I'm loving that about my new job. While they all have to go in the conference room and argue, I just walk by and do my job and do my work. It's been delightful. But it's the same concept. You have a limited amount of resource, and you have to decide what gets done. And we're going to open up some scheduling conflicts. We're going to actually look at some of that stuff as we go further into this lesson. But the general underpinnings is we need to make room to God. We would sure like God to make room for us. So we're back in Timothy, 1 Timothy 2, starting in verse 1. First of all, then, I urge that supplications, prayers, intercessions, and thanksgiving be made for all men, for kings and all who are in high positions, that we may lead a quiet and peaceful life, godly and respectful in every way. This is good and is acceptable in the sight of God our Savior, who desires all men to be saved and come to the knowledge of the truth. First of all, that's such an interesting thing to put first, and I don't think it's accidental in any way. I have heard many of you in this room pray for our leaders. I've heard you pray for the leaders that I voted for, and you probably did. I've heard you pray for the leaders that I didn't vote for, and you didn't as well. And you prayed for them in the same way, and that touched my heart. And it gave me wisdom. And it made me realize that we're not called to pray for the leaders from our party or who we align with. In fact, the ones who are many steps away might need prayers more. They might need wisdom. The lives of many people hang on their decisions in the same way. And you guys have been great mentors in that regard, from this pulpit, from this microphone, in our classes. I've heard you pray for our leaders, and it's helped make me mindful where I stand, because I have some difficulty praying for the wrong team. What I see as the wrong team. But the truth is, that's my human opinion. God doesn't ask us to pray for the king we like and to ignore the king we don't. So paying careful attention to this first of all message, I want us to go forward and we're going to talk first about fathers. And I had a hard time finding good father pictures, so I apologize if this guy looks weird. But the idea is fathers have a lot of hats to wear today. The young men of our church, and I say young men, I really mean young family men, so we're talking about men in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, they're being pulled in a ton of different directions. And I start with them because the Bible calls out these men to be the spiritual leaders for their families. So if you want to have a rich ministry, if you want to have an impact beyond today, minister to somebody who's ministering to others. Spend time blessing somebody who can be a blessing to others. And so I think our young fathers have some distress. And so I have just, and this only took me about 20 minutes, listed a few of the hats our young father wears. And I'm not going to read them all here, but I'll go across the top. Father, groundskeeper, fisherman, citizen, child of God, driver, professional, financial advisor, referee. You're looking at this list thinking, I've got a couple that aren't on there. and I'm sure you do. We ask a lot of these men, an amazing amount. And to be perfectly candid, those hats aren't all going to stay on. They're not going to all get worn the same amount of time. And they're not all going to get worn in the right building at the right exact moment. What we can do is we can talk to these men. We can talk to them when they think they're doing it right. And we can mentor and encourage. And we can talk to them when they know they've done it wrong. I've spoken with some of the young men of our church, and this is a bright and very candid group of young men. The class in the fellowship hall that David Gray is leading this morning, I have heard some of the discussions that they've shared in there about their spirituality, about where they think they've failed, about what they think they need to learn in order to become good parents. And it's humbling. It's just absolutely humbling the way they're sharing and talking one with another. And I will tell you guys that while they're involved in that discussion and journey, I think we need some discussion like this to get ready to help them in the days ahead. Because David is making it clear to them that they're not alone. They're not solving these problems in a vacuum. And we need to make it clear. Well, let's just take this for example. If this is a week that you'd wear all these hats as a dad? Or is it every day? It's often, right? You're not going to wear them all well. I think some of us in here could help them find the important hats in that big list. And I think we could help them make sure they wear them in the right order. And by the way, I'm not entirely sure that Fisher of Men belongs at the bottom of this list. I'll just tell you right now, I struggled for a long time where to put our calling as a Christian. I really did. And so if you have some challenges on that, I'm open. You might be right. But my list went child of God, spiritual leader, husband, father, and fisher of men. Somebody who's not a child of God is not going to be of use to anybody. A man's spiritual leader role in his household is probably the most important one, especially when I'm teaching a Bible class. You can't be a good father until you're a good husband. It has to happen in that order, but my suspicion is being a good husband involves being a good father. But there were a lot of, I'm going to back up a slide, if I have that technology, ooh, I do. There are a lot of those hats that are pretty important that just dropped right off of there. And guys, as we go forward this morning, that's one of the things I'm going to ask you to help mentor these people with. Because if the answer is, tell me how I can do everything all the time, the outcome may not be what's expected. The outcome may be failure. Some of you who are pretty handy have farmed out work in your house. I'll tell stories on him because he's not here. Todd Corey's, he knows his way around tools. And a while back, when Todd was between jobs, he was showing me around his kitchen remodel, and I was getting to see where they were doing a wainscot ceiling, and there was lots of interesting stuff going on. It looked like it was going to be great. And I said, well, what are you going to do when you get a job? And he didn't even miss a beat. He said, I'm going to hire somebody to do this. And I thought, well, that probably hurt him to say that. No, it wasn't his attitude at all. If he had the money, he would be glad to hire somebody to do that job. And again, Todd's handy. He's handier than me. He's better at remodeling a kitchen than I'll ever be. If I remodel kitchens from now on, I'm not sure I'd catch him. And yet, he knew he had to make a decision, if that makes any sense to you. He knew if he has to put on the hat again as a professional and go to work, he can't be trying to do the kitchen too. And at some point, he'd be a bad husband and father if the kitchen was in disarray for 5 years. Don't tell Cindy I said that. So, we have the wisdom to help them make these decisions, to help them decide the hats to put on and the hats to leave off. And I'm not so sure we're going to go around willy-nilly putting our nose in people's business and rechanging their priorities. And that's not what I'm after at all. But we will find these people when they know they're in trouble. And they will seek us out. In fact, they're being told, please seek out your fellow Christian friends when trouble occurs. And I just want us to be ready. And I don't want us to shrink away from that. Because if you've reached this age, you have already succeeded at these decisions. You've made the right decision. Or, like me, 20% of your decisions were wrong. But I can also share that. I can also say, let me tell you what's the wrong move here, and then move forward. So if you help a father be a leader, you've blessed a whole family. Being a spiritual leader is one of the most important things a man can do. And this is not taught in school. And I'm not sure it can be taught in a home that doesn't have a Christian mentor. There are some things you can learn by negative example, right? My father was a terrible alcoholic. And he taught me very effectively that I don't ever want to drink liquor. And that lesson has lasted for 5 decades and rolling right now. And I have no temptation for liquor, and I never will. And I say that to you all very candidly. He taught me a negative lesson. But it's really almost impossible to teach somebody how to be a good Christian leader by not being it. What you can do is demonstrate the need for a good Christian leader in your home. So we may be the example that's needed. We may be the mentors to fill the gap. Just to get a little discussion going, who taught you guys to be the spiritual leader of your family, men? Who was it? Was it your father? You know, give me some show of hands if it was your father. All right, I saw a lot of hands. Was it a grandfather? A couple of hands, yes. Yeah. Uncle? Somebody from church? Okay, some of that too. I like that some of you raised your hands twice, and I'm in that same boat as well. There were a lot of people who were influencing me, maybe because I'm so stubborn or dim. No comments from the gallery on that. But I really think that we're in a crisis mode in America today because we have young families that are coming into the church who are coming out of a different example for spiritual leadership. Fathers who don't get up on Sunday morning and go to church is obviously a hole. But what they do on Sunday morning might cause us more grief. It might cause even more confusion for their children as they're looking at how to order their life. So if you want to really bless somebody, help a father be a spiritual leader in his own home. If we want to bring up this generation for God that we've been entrusted with at Glenpool, and I know that we all do, I've had too many of you take me aside and say that's important to you personally. We've got to get their fathers in a spiritual leadership role. And I don't mean perfect leaders. I don't mean their fathers have to do everything right at the first. But we need to give the fathers permission to give it a shot. And we need to be there when things don't go well. And if there's no father around, there are family models where there's not a ready father. I think it then falls to the men of the church to be a reasonable example to those young people. Because we have generations upon generations, probably three now, in generations in America, where the father is broken out of the family model, where the father was a missing component. And I find it amazing that in almost all these cases, mother was steady and reliable, and dad wandered off somehow. I know that sounded judgy, and I meant it to be. I apologize about that, but you have to evaluate what's actually happened. So moving on, we'll get on to our mothers next. Oh, and I'm not going to read more of this because of time purposes, but Martha and Mary. Martha's in the kitchen helping get everything ready. Is there a kitchen? There's probably a hearth in the corner. Let's pretend it's a kitchen for now. And Mary's at the feet of Jesus listening to him teach. That's my setup, starting in verse 40. But Martha was distracted with much serving, and she went to him and said, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Tell her then to help me." But the Lord answered her, "Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things, but one thing is necessary. Mary has chosen the good portion, which will not be taken away from her." My response to this, I'm not here to fight a battle on the role of women in the church today. There are a few reasons I may not be qualified to do that. But my comment is, knowing what's important is the key to putting it first. Understanding when something significant is going on. Because really, time management is all about comparing things. Schedule normalization is all about putting things off or taking things off. That's the whole key to it. I've attended award-winning speakers on time management, but what it all boils down to is there's some things you don't need to be doing, and you need to have a system of prioritization to figure out what that is. Jesus, in this case, is resetting Martha's expectations on priority. And it comes across a little bit rough and a little bit harsh, but I have been dressed down more harshly by some people in this room who I still hug and call brother, who I'm still glad to see every day and call sister. So I don't think we need to take this as a condemnation of Martha. I think we need to take this as a priority reset. Jesus knew that he wouldn't be around teaching forever. Jesus knew that the things that he taught at that moment would echo forward in time, as evidenced by a group of people who gathered 2,000 years later to hear about them. I would say very significant, very important. And so when we're talking about mothers, I hope those came through. Dad only had one busy slide, okay? I want that for the record. Mom got two. Why do you think Mom gets two? What's the difference between these two slides? These two pictures on this slide. Anybody? Yep. Jim, I just wish your wife was here to hear you say that. I'm going to try to get you some points later. Jim points out that one slide represents keeping a home in order, and the other slide represents a career and all the things that were needed in a career. And I will tell you guys, in my lifetime, and I'm not that old compared to some of you, I have seen the expectation for mothers completely change from here's your sphere of influence, run a godly home, raise up those children, to now, what do we expect from mothers today? What's that? Everything we do, How do you set somebody up for failure? You ask them to do everything. If I had a football team that hadn't won a game in 5 years and I drafted a great quarterback and I said, now I want you to fix all of it. even a quarterback, and let's be honest, quarterbacks aren't that bright. I'm defense, just so you know. The quarterback would say, coach, what about the defense? Right? Well, you're going in as safety. How about them apples? I'm telling you now, that team's not going to win any more games, in my estimation. But there's no limit to what we're asking from others in our society. And so many of them are doing it without a father because the husband has gone off somewhere or done something, wandered away. Don't get me started. I'm not supposed to preach. I'm not a licensed preacher, so I'm going to keep it calm this morning. But there's no point in listing the hats that a mother wears. The screens aren't big enough for the hats that a mother wears because there are mothers in our neighborhood right around our church who are wearing every hat the father wore and a whole host of hats that he wasn't. And you talk about somebody who needs prioritization, about somebody who needs, because it doesn't matter what the most important thing to do is. If I have two jobs today, go to church and read the Bible for a couple of hours, and you give me 12 hours of daylight, I'm going to get both those jobs done. I'm going to succeed. Even if I wait to read the Bible until just before bed, right? I'm no problem. If you give me 25 things to do that each take an hour to an hour and a half, we've got a problem. If you give me 50, you see where this goes. So let's talk about the practicality of this. I hope that moved. Okay. Mothers are everywhere today. In my lifetime, the expected norm for a mother has changed from stay at home and raise children to simply accomplish everything. There may be no traditional mother role anymore, and I struggled when I wrote this. It came off of my fingers, and it shocked me a little bit. And I'm not sure I'm right. There may be a role, and we just, as a society, may not value it the way we used to. And I'm open to that. I'm open to talk about that. We have working mothers, homeschool teachers, entrepreneurs working from home. There are three women at last count in this church who run a business out of their home. In addition to all the other things they're doing, they've got an income stream into their home. I have tremendous respect for this. Our mothers need help locating the good portion. And honestly, they may need some help covering them so they can enjoy it. What do I mean by coverage here? Any ideas? What relief? Donnell. Angela has you trained well, my friend. You tell her. Give her a thumbs up. They might need somebody to look at the kids for them. There are four of you who aren't in this class right now because you're down the hall teaching. And I cannot give you any better example than what your peers have done. They have said, I'm going to go teach those kids so mom can attend a Bible class. That's just so lovely. I'm going to tear up if I think about it too much. But that's what happened in church when I was a lad. It's what happened in church when you were a lad. And it's what should happen in church in 20 more years and 30 more years and 50 more years. And I hope it always does. If nothing else, This is the place where the words of Jesus echo out. I would love for our mothers to be able to come and have a respite, to be able to come and enjoy the good portion on Sunday morning. And in order to do that, some of us may have to be elsewhere. Some of us may have to be attending a snotty nose or an insolent junior high student. There's no other kind of junior high student, I don't think, but insolent, but you know what I mean. And you guys do that. I'm not here to beat you up about not teaching classes. You all teach classes. Bill Path, some years ago, said, Glenpool's the only church I've ever attended where we didn't have to twist people's arms to get them to teach classes. And I was a little bit skeptical about that statement. But quarter after quarter, you guys volunteer, you guys step up, and you guys do wonderful work teaching. I believe Jesus would be down the hall if he was here, at least part of the day. I believe, suffer the children, come to me. By that he meant it's important to teach these young children. And so one of the ways we can provide coverage for mothers is to physically help them. Some actual aid, not rhetoric. But let's talk about some other ways we can help mothers. We can mentor them, and I'll talk in a minute about what we mentor them about. We can babysit for them, just flat out babysit. We can encourage, we can counsel, we can teach. So if mom has an opportunity to attend a class, she's going to need a teacher for that class. We can teach the children, which we've already talked about. I think it's important that we praise their success. We've got some kids who run around this building like, what's that kind of dog that runs everywhere? A Jack Russell Terrier? They run around like a Jack Russell Terrier. But we also have some kids who are respectful. It's hard for me to chase every single one of those children down and scowl at them. Susan and I have this philosophical conversation all the time. Jim's wife and I both feel like there might be a way to calm the kids down. She's been bribing them with gum for some time now. I'm sorry if I'm telling all the dirty laundry here, but she's resorted to bribery. And I have moved from scowling to some actual grabbing of shoulders occasionally. But one thing that all of us could do would be to find the children who are not acting like a wild maniac and praise them to their mother, or praise that mother to their father, or praise that father to the world, because that would be an opportunity to catch somebody doing something positive. And then the other way mothers need some help is fixing failures. I'm not here to get into the details of any failure, but you cannot juggle 12 plates without breaking one. You know that circus act where they put the plates on the sticks? I'm not prepared to demonstrate that. I'm not like David. I can't do props. But let's pretend I could. Eventually, one of those plates falls and smashes. And I think it's a real Christian work of service to have the virtual broom pan and to just start picking it up. We had a baby who spit up in the sanctuary. And I saw it from across, in the foyer. I saw it from across the hall. And I went, and I thought, went to the closest location of towels and immediately went to go help that. Before I got there, two of you, not one, but two of you, were already there on your knees picking up that mess. I don't know where the towels came from. It was here, and I went in the cry room. But before I got back, there were two people there. And I bless you guys for that sort of thing. I'm not saying a mother failed because the baby spit up, because, you know, that's baby's going to be a baby. But those sorts of things can really help ease the mind of a troubled mother, of somebody who's worried. Now, okay, this is my dramatic slide. In our example earlier where I had two things to do in a 12-hour day to do them, that's all happy, right? There's no problem there. The only thing that would prevent me from getting that work done is sheer laziness, right? And Donnell, you know I'm capable. Because where's my nap, right? Well, I got to eat. But that's not real life. In time management, we call two things happening at the same time. What do we call that? Multitask, right? Or a scheduling conflict. Yeah, multitask happens if I try to do both at the same time. For reference, any 80s sitcom where the guy had two dates at the same night, right? Do you remember that show? And he runs back and forth. Never works to do multitasking. I'm tempted to quote you can't serve two masters, but I don't think it's a direct application, but I have quoted it before in that situation. I think it's hard to do two things successfully at once. My dear friend who's an executive at a large company in Oklahoma talks about a mindfulness program for their employees. They've entered this thing called mindfulness. And basically, I was somewhat speculative about this whole activity because to me, a focus on mindfulness just seems like you're asking people to pay attention. When I was a worker, they just said, pay attention, son. What are you looking at? What are you doing? Don't look out the window. Pay attention. But I think multitasking has a mindfulness problem. In timekeeping systems, we actually call this collisions, when you have two things that happen on the same day. I'm taking a vacation day next week. And when the timekeeping system runs, I'll have a regularly scheduled work day, and then there'll be a vacation come in on the calendar. They overstep on each other. I'm a computer guy, as you well know. I have to have one of these things have priority. So vacation wins the collision every time. Vacation is more important. Now, this thing's more important than a vacation, but we won't talk about that. And then in the world of computing, I apologize, but I think like a computer scientist sometime. But in the world of computing, we have these concepts called interrupts. And these are processes that can happen inside a computer which have the right, which have the privilege to interrupt other things that go on. And so I say all these things to say, where the rubber meets the road in time management is when two things overlap. The science of time management, or the importance of biblical priorities, never gets talked about until something conflicts, until something like this happens. One of those people was supposed to be in that lane. I actually don't know which one. They're both foreign cars, so I can't think of who would have the moral high ground. All right. In order to establish the priority of a given activity, I would suggest that we need to mentor our young by asking a few questions. Why are we doing this activity? And I'm not anti-football. I need to say this in Glenpool at the beginning. I am pro-football. I'm not against it. But we should really, we should ask this to make sure you're getting the most of the activity. The reason for the activity, do not compare favorably, then drop it when you conflict. So, how many NFL draft picks are there? Any idea? Some of you know, I bet. Two 259. Yeah, you're close. 259 total. There's some negotiation on the missing part per year. How many men are there that are about 22 years old in America at any given moment? Any idea here? 2.5 million. 2.5 million. So there's a 0.0104% chance that a given child, just chance, would be an NFL candidate. Don't get me started on draft picks that wash out. You could write a book about that, and I got some friends who are in that book. So I'm going to suggest that you probably shouldn't have your child play football so they can become a professional football player. That's where I'm at right there. Some of your children will, by the way. But there are a lot of good reasons to do team sports. more than I had room to list. Teamwork. Responding to adversity. Because what happens? You win football games and you learn how to be a graceful winner. What happens when you lose football games? You learn how to be a humble loser. You learn a lot of lessons when you lose. I maybe have more experience losing than most. But you learn how to be grateful. You learn that your opponent is not your enemy. Right? It took me a long time to learn that your opponent's not your enemy. The enemy, and I think Bobby knows this, is the referee. No apologies to referees out there. But you do learn that there's a process of arbitration in any human endeavor. And that you learn that the arbiter is imperfect. We have a perfect arbiter in our Father and God. But don't expect anybody who puts on a striped shirt to be perfect. Can I just say it that way? If we are expecting that, we're making a mistake. So Being exposed to this in football teaches a lot of life lessons. Soccer, basketball, softball, I could keep going all day. There's great reasons to be in youth sports. But it's not because my kid's going to be a professional. I enrolled one of my kids in Pop Warner football when it was time, and he was 34 pounds too heavy to carry the ball. Couldn't touch the ball at all. The ball would have been down right there. First point you're ready to play tackle football. It was a fourth and fifth grade league. This kid was in the third grade. I think you know the kid I'm talking about. I called a friend of mine who's a former NFL player to complain to him, and he laughed and laughed, and he said, "Devin, nobody who's going to play professional football is small enough to play Pop Warner. That's not the purpose of Pop Warner football. Why are you trying to do that?" Because my question to him was, how do professional football players get their experience? And his comment was, none of them. And he's Samoan, and Samoan are big, and they're big when they're young, too. But so he had a real point, but he basically, statistically, he's right. If you're small enough to play Pop Warner and run around with the ball, you're not going to be pro, because you would already be 6 foot tall when you were in the fifth grade. And you couldn't touch the ball because you'd crush the other kids. So the statistics on it aren't good on sports, but the life lessons, that's what matters. And if you can figure out how to extract the life lessons from sports, godly precepts, now you're on the right track. So I'm going to get into a brief amount of computing here. This is an inner ring example. I've got ring 0, ring 1, ring 2, and ring 3. And in computing, I'm old enough that computers were really slow, and you would sit there and wonder what your computer is doing. So we needed to have a process for a more important application, more important process, to interrupt other processes running. Randy, you're with me. Someone's with me, I think. How this can apply to godliness is God's priorities need to control what interrupts. And I would submit to you that what we call the kernel, which is the center of this, is the most important part, is God's law. And anything that conflicts with our duty to the Lord God should win. It should be able to interrupt any other activity that's going on. Television watching, well, let's get into it. Here's some conflict examples that you guys could help a young family straighten out real quick. What's more important, homework versus Pokemon Go? Anybody? Okay, how many of you don't even know what Pokemon Go is? But you knew homework was more important, didn't you? Huh? You're not irrelevant. You knew that. Tennis practice versus Sunday service. What's most important? Swat him for me, would you? Sunday service. Going to the mall versus mowing the lawn. Now, if you're retired, going to the mall could be pretty important, actually. But if you're a 20-year-old man, you need to mow my lawn. I mean, I'm not getting personal about it, whoever it is. Violin lessons versus helping grandma. Helping grandma. Grandma can probably play the kazoo. She could teach you something while you're there. Feeding the chickens or watching TV? No. Larry's comment is watching the TV is most important. And I know you don't miss Matlock, I know. But really, but you're not irrelevant. You're not out of touch. We can help with these collisions. We do not play Pokemon Go, but we know it's less important than homework. We each have half a lifetime of resolving these conflicts. By opening up a Bible in a practical way to our friends, we can help them with these everyday problems. Oop, and I think I'm being called out. Okay, Ecclesiastes, at the end of the matter, all has been heard. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. Thank you all so much for your attention. I appreciate you guys so much for what happens in here and for what you guys do all over the church and all over the community. Y'all have a great day.